letting everyone in. This is going to be a clown car interview because we're going to have five people on. So here we go. You get a podcast and you get a podcast and you get a podcast. Let me give you all a quick official BeerNet Radio welcome. So today on BeerNet Radio, we're going to talk about the budding Delta 9 beverage landscape. I'm sorry, I had to. I'm terrible. Anyway, we have some... you haven't heard that before. So we have some experts. Chris Freem, brand manager at Miller Coors House Hohensteins in Minneapolis, St. Paul. We have Ted Whitney, head of sales for Reaxis, maker of Delta 9 THC beverages like Squared and 3Chi. And Sean Hackney, who I am just meeting for the first time, operating partner of Bar Beverages, a craft beer, wine, soda, and juice distributor in Southern California. So welcome, gentlemen. Thank you all for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, we chatted, BeerNet Radio chatted with Ted and Chris last fall about this developing segment of the market, right? These sort of, I don't know if this is a dirty term for y'all, but like intoxicating hemp beverages, making it to shelves, you know, in mainstream retailers, right? And we've seen Total Wine take them at more and more stores across the country. We've seen more, you know, BevAlc distributors pick these kinds of products up. And meanwhile, we've got some AGs apparently pushing back a little bit. We've got the Farm Bill potentially being reissued this year and maybe things changing. So, you know, maybe we'll start with either Ted or Chris, whoever wants to jump in about what you guys see as some pivotal maybe developments between December and now in terms of the landscape for these kinds of beverages.
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump in. Just we've been doing it for over 2 years now of selling these products. And really the one thing that I've really noticed in the last couple of months, specifically since last time we talked, is that the Delta 9 low potency hemp beverages, the category itself, it's almost become its own subcategory of the entire THC industry too. Like we don't even talk about it in the same realm of like the gummies and the candy bars that are all hemp based and are, you know, good under this. We have almost entirely focused everything on the beverages. And I think a lot of that just has to do with not only is the beverage something that as a distributor, we're good at working with, like it's a freight intensive product. But for me personally, it has a lot more to do with the occasion for drinking it, the ritual of drinking it, and the consumer base that's drinking it. It was something we had recognized super early on and really didn't know what we were looking at. And now we know we're right. We're just like, no, this is completely different. So we've actually been trying to just change our language as a whole of just talking about the beverages and whatever anybody else wants to do with the other stuff, you guys go ahead. But in our world, in our distributor world, in our retail spaces, for the most part, beverage is what we're looking at almost entirely.
Chris, I love how you guys have grabbed onto the beverages. And I think it's such an important distinction to draw. With the Hemp Beverage Alliance, what we're pushing forward is the idea that we need to bifurcate the market. The consumer that goes into dispensaries doesn't buy these beverages at retail. They're not buying these at the regulated retail. They are buying these in droves in the unregulated market. The dispensary channel hasn't cracked 1% of sales in any market with we call them low dose beverages. They're just beverages, 5 milligram, 10 milligram, even up to 100 milligrams haven't cracked 1% of sales in dispensaries. Now we want to keep low dose beverages in the unregulated market. And that's going through responsible retailers that Chris and Hohensteins are selling to. They're applying age gates. They're applying really good compliance steps. They've been working hand in hand with the state of Minnesota to make sure that everything is in good form. Everything's batch tested. Everything's well regulated. Everything is safe as we get out to the public. And they're showing great results from it too. The state of Minnesota is getting about $1.5 million in incremental revenue additions just from the hemp line item tax. And we expect that to dramatically improve as people figure out how to pay it. And we see more and more retailers coming in. But this bifurcation, I think, is the most important development since we spoke last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That $1.5 million, is that monthly or yearly?
Monthly.
Okay. Yeah.
On the month, every month. And I would expect they'll be cracking $2 million soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy. Enough around. You can't beat that revenue.
Right. Right. Well, I want to get to Sean in a second and learn why he decided to bring these kinds of beverages on, but also want to ask, you know, about the Total Wine component of things. You know, they recently brought these kinds of beverages into California. And I actually didn't know it was legal for D9 beverages to be in California. And I guess that kind of plays into the larger conversation of this state by state. There is a state by state kind of by default method of regulation because states define it or not, right? And then, or somewhere in between. So what can anybody speak to there? I'm sure you all can speak to something on that point.
Well, every state had to adopt a hemp framework when we came out of the Farm Bill in 2019. And it took varying amounts of time. AB 45 was passed in California to make this entire space legal, but it was really tough to be fully compliant. We couldn't have any kind of THCA isolation. We couldn't have cannabinoid conversion. We needed naturally occurring D9 to go into our drinks. And then nobody knew who could sell it. So the ABC went on record saying any licensed establishment can sell these drinks, as long as you don't put alcohol in them at that establishment. And we created a whole framework. Sean is actually the first person in California, or the first real distributor in California, to have a license to distribute these drinks. And he's been a pioneer in that space. I'll let him talk about it as I crack open a squared sour grape.
Sponsored by?
I wouldn't necessarily say a pioneer. I was very blessed to run into a gentleman I've known for a lot of years, John Durante, who runs Show Me Beverage out in Missouri. He gave me a rip maybe October and said, "Hey, we just moved a pallet of Cycling Frog in a week, and you should look at this, Sean." And I said, "Well, what is Cycling Frog?" And he's like, "Oh, it's a THC beverage." And I started laughing. I said, "We can't do that at all here. This is, you know, in my world, THC means the regulated market and dispensaries, even though I've never, ever been into a dispensary myself." Mm-hmm. My wife and I are co-owners, and we, you know, I haven't smoked since I was in college forever ago. So, I mean, we would just never go to that destination to buy marijuana. But I just knew that, you know, we've got a couple $1 million craft beer and wine and a little bit of sake business. And I didn't want to put that at risk. So when John had mentioned this to me, I said, "Well, how are you guys doing it?" And he said, "Well, it's legal." And he gave me the federal, you know, the federal 2018 Farm Bill argument. And it just so happens when this business started years and years ago as an energy drink business and kind of morphed into an up and down the street distributor. My father was one of my partners who happened to be a attorney and Midwest conservative guy. I'm like, "I don't want to put anything at risk. I'm going to take a deep dive." And I, in fact, did that. And I talked to the DCC, the Department of Cannabis Control. I talked to CABC. I talked to anybody I could talk to figure out what we could do. And it just so happens in California, the California Department of Public Health are the folks that actually regulate D9 beverages. And there's a lot of confusion in the market. Prior to 2021, when AB 45 passed in California, folks were carrying, you know, independent liquor stores were carrying CBD drinks, and you'd have the Orange County Department of Health or the Kern County Department of Health walking in and telling retailers that they couldn't sell these products. Obviously, things changed with AB 45. And now we've had to go in and re-educate people on the fact that THC and CBD, CBD at 18 and THC at any age at this point, can be sold via licensed establishments or non-licensed establishment. It's my understanding the only place that we cannot sell hemp beverages or hemp products is into dispensaries. We've taken because there's no real regulatory, tighter regulatory controls, we've taken the approach that we're going to educate our client base on the rules, and we're going to suggest that they do only 21 plus because that's our alcohol imbibing age, and as well as a dispensary imbibing age. So we've taken that approach, and even we'll put stickers on our cases that say 21 plus, don't mix with alcohol, so that the person or the manager or the owner who purchases our products may forget to tell the new employee 6 months from now. We'd like to make sure that they're on notice, because we want them to be, you know, compliant or self-regulating the way we're suggesting, because we don't have a mature market like Chris does. We're just out of the gate.
It seems like de facto, the way that these things are going to market and the way that you're describing the self-regulation at a lot of beer and beverage wholesalers, it seems like eventually this is going to be codified, most likely, as something that gets sold through three tier. You know, do you guys agree or no?
Yeah. I absolutely agree. Inside of the industry, we're all advocating for it. We've got the Hemp Beverage Alliance, the U.S. Hemp Roundtable, and a lot of us pointing to examples like Sean and Chris and what a great job they've both done of creating a foundation that we can build the whole industry upon.
Yeah. And earnestly, I mean, I have an 18-year-old and two 16-year-olds. And it concerns me as a dad that, and again, this is, I believe this to be true. I can't put a fact on it, but that a THC only drink can be sold to a 12-year-old in this state. And I don't think that that's appropriate, you know, until at least the 18 plus age. And we're banking on 21, but yeah, I think that there should be some regulation because I think this is an intoxicating beverage. And one of the beauties of the intoxicating beverage is that it goes away. There's no hangover, you know, there's no residual effect. So yeah, I think the codification is coming. I think the taxation in California is coming too.
Yeah. That's something that we had looked at kind of the same where I love hearing the language of like the self-regulating responsibly. That's something that we talked about so much at Hohenstein's early on. And it really just kind of became a motto and it got all of us really comfortable with it. But I think our comfortability with it just translated to retail and then eventually down to the consumers as well. Like really the only governor we have right now of how fast this category is growing has been the consumers themselves. If we had our way, and I know the suppliers too, everything would have been done yesterday and last week and 3 months ago. We would be really far along, but at least we have that. The consumers have been the ones that are slowly adopting to this. And you guys will see that within your organization as well. Because when we started out, it was a lot of those same questions of, do you lock it up? Do we put it under cameras? What do we do with the samples? Do we sample these on Friday morning? And now, you know, a year or two into it, it lives alongside the beer. It is no different than any of the other packages we have in here. We just treat it all the same as an adult beverage that's intoxicating. Because I would agree with you too. I don't think anybody under the age of 18 or 21 should be consuming any of this stuff. It is a mood altering, mind altering product. But these beverages in the low potency amounts that we have, this is by far the safest and best way to bring this type of product that all the studies show a majority of Americans want it. This has got to be one of the safest ways to do it. And we're happy to be a part of it and be able to kind of go that way. And it's another reason why we are trying to separate it so much further from recreational marijuana, because it is not the same. The point of these is not to get high. It's to just alter your mood a little bit and while still being social and out and about and still being able to be a functioning part of society without, you know, without fully being sober either. So
yeah, that microdose is amazing. Chris, I got a question for you. Do you guys carry anything above the 10 or 10 milligram? And if so, how do you regulate that?
No, in Minnesota, the cap is 10 milligrams. Okay. And honestly, it's really strange. Anecdotally, everybody I talk to, literally everybody I talk to, 10's too much for what they want to do with it and how they're using it. And they really like the 5s and the 2.5s. The data that I see is not agreeing with that at all. The 10s have been moving a little bit quicker and we're doing a decent amount of volume at the 10s compared to the 5s. So I don't know where the disconnect really is there. And we're kind of waiting for the market to, again, tell us what we're looking at. But that the whole world, that the story is always the same, that it's the low potency micro dosing aspect of it is fantastic. And it is really when I think a lot of Americans who want THC, this is kind of exactly what they're talking about. They're not all looking to get just blitzed every night. They're looking for, you know, like a glass of wine or a, you know, a one-y or something right before bed type of thing. That's the market for this.
Chris, I could not agree with you more. And again, not being a smoker, we've got, there's an issue there's a supply chain issue in regulated cannabis that you have to go to a, it's a destination location. And for folks like my wife and I, we're never going to make that destination. Then we're never going to smoke. So there's the beverages also deliver that, that aspect of usability. It's amazing. And my case in point, I think it fits the trend of better for you, right? Not only is there the cannabis trend, but it also fits the better for you trend. The guy you're looking at is down 50 pounds since 1/1/24 because I did a simple substitution diet instead of my bottle of wine every night. I'm doing one or two THC drinks and I'm up the next morning, going to the gym. I work for an hour. I work for an hour, go to the gym for an hour. And I feel great. It's absolutely my personally, I think it's an amazing, amazing alternative to alcohol, even though I still, you know, I brought wine and beer back into the mix, but for the most part, it's given me just a huge opportunity to not be foggy the next morning. It gives me a huge opportunity to go out and be super functional and drive my business. And my wife, who is, you know, just amazing and much more health conscious than I am in her eating habits and everything else, she substituted away from cider, a glass of wine or cider every night to a can of Cycling Frog or a Rexis soda water. And they're just, you know, she's getting up and managing the family and then in here helping with the business. It's exceptional.
Sean, I want to underscore that too, just by making sure everyone knows that beverages inside of dispensaries in no state have ever broken 1% of revenue. In California, it was like 0.6% of revenue last year. Beverages just don't work in the regulated channel. And that's a lot of why we're trying to make these more available. We believe it's a win-win to have them in a well-regulated channel that's available to everybody. You know, licensed accounts are great providers. We want to see taxation in the space. We want to see regulation around age gating. And that's all stuff that we're working with Senator Aguiar Curry right now to create.
Yeah, I'm all for it. And Chris, the reason I was asking about the higher dose is I've got a belief that if you get to a 25 or a 50 milligram dose, you know, if that ever hits California, which I believe it's legal to hit, you know, our go-to-market strategy will be to put it behind the counter at liquor stores, if it doesn't go to dispensaries, but put it behind the counter at liquor stores, because I certainly won't want anybody to think they're getting a 5 milligram dose and accidentally get a 50 milligram dose. Like that to me is a recipe for a consumer disaster, yeah. Right? You know, and we don't want that. It's not good for the industry. It's not good for everybody who wants to be able to microdose, to be able to have a, you know, glass of wine equivalent.
Glass of wine. Is there an appetite for that though, Sean, or is anyone making those drinks yet?
Bianca, I don't know. But what I do know is that I was one of the first employees for Red Bull. And if you remember Red Bull, when we came to the US, they were in these little 8.3-ounce cans. And because in Europe, less is more. In the US, more is more. And so I would argue that there's going to be some kind of inflation based on milligram dosage. And, you know, there's people who buy Everclear. Yeah. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that the value equation in a lot of consumers' minds is how much bang am I going to get for my buck? We just did the LA Beer Fest and just had a wonderful experience with Dan Silverstein. He puts on great events. And even pouring some of our beers like Prison Pals, people would walk up and say, well, just give me your strongest beer. Right. And that's really not the nuance of social drinking. That's I want to get drunk. I would believe that there's a subsegment of the population that's going to want that.
Yeah. Along those lines, that's just going back to like the testing and regulating and stuff. That's one thing that we've really also been trying to champion is accurate testing and having access to the COAs and everything like that. Because you're right there, the scalping is an issue. That's when the THC falls out of the product. You don't want somebody to be drinking one that they had a poor can liner, they didn't do their homework, their emulsion technology's not up to snuff. And they've been drinking these ones they think are 10s, but it turns out they're down to 3 or 0 milligrams. And they've been drinking those and then go to the store and try a 10. And then all of a sudden that 10 kind of knocks them down. And yeah, we don't want to see that as well. And that's why, again, just kind of trying to keep the discussion of having the low potency and capped at something like 10 is keeping it separate from the rest of that world. And again, keeps it safer for everybody across the board. But I have heard just anecdotally that from all of the THC first suppliers, recreational space suppliers that are looking to get in the hemp space, they said that pretty much across the board, all of the times they had beverages, they started with 2.5, then 5, then 10. And now some of them are making hundreds. And like that's where the market directed them to go. And I've personally sat down and drank 100, and there was a good 20 to 30 minutes that wasn't fun. For me, it was just too much. And I'm what we call a legacy user. I would think my tolerance is up there. But I know there's people out there that are drinking those. But again, that experience was so different than the microdosing and having a couple over a period of time. And actually, I just saw on Facebook, before I was working, when I was on Facebook, somebody had pointed out there was like a picture of like Pabst's THC product that they only have in California, as far as I know. But one of the comments on there, one of the comments on there was, well, I'd have to drink 10 of these.
Oh,
I was like, well, yeah, do you get drunk on one can of Pabst?
Right.
No,
right,
if your intent was to get high, there's way more ways to do it, way more economically feasible ways to do it. Flower's still really, relatively cheap. And if you want to go from 0 to 60, there's way better ways to do it. So again, just going back to that occasion, the reason for the drinks is so different. And you really only kind of learn it as you experience it too, and you have it. Like I said, I've been using THC for 20 years, and the first time I had a 3-pack at a block party, I was like, this is so different than anything I've ever done in the THC space, and I love it. And that's really, again, when we just jumped both feet into the pool and just trying to navigate it since then. And I wish I could say that it gets easier and easier, but it hasn't. We're learning more and more every day. And we are to the point now where like compliance checks are one of the biggest kind of hurdles that we have right now. Mostly because they keep moving the goalposts on us. They show us one list of regulations that they want to have compliant on the label. And then all of a sudden we hear, well, no, this other thing, we can't have that there either. It's like, okay, we'll put it on the list so we can do it. They're going backwards on it. And it's been tough to get the state behind it and working with us to help regulate it. We all want it regulated.
Chris, do you think your regulators in Minnesota have a good grasp of either a 3-tier or how markets work? I mean, here, the CABC, they've got it dialed. They've got the infrastructure. They know how to regulate. They know enforcement. They know their laws are codified and used, and the questions have been asked 100 times. But you guys are, it sounds like 2 years ahead of us. Whoever's regulating industrial hemp in Minnesota, do they get it, or are they just kind of? And I'm not trying to make a say something mean, but do they understand the value of you and your organization and what you bring to the market in trying to help regulate and support structures as they evolve, or are the structures already evolved?
There's a clear miscommunication between our side of the industry. And right now in Minnesota, the health department is the one regulating it. It was, I believe, the pharmacy, and now it's the health department. Up until March of next year, we should have the Office of Cannabis Management put together, and they will take over. I trust that committee that they put together would be more willing to kind of learn and hear and work with us, where the health department right now, I think they're kind of setting their ways a little bit. They work with the people they work with, and we haven't really worked with the health department as an alcohol company, and we don't sell any food or anything, so we haven't really worked with them. And I've personally reached out a few times, especially as a retailer gets a check from a health department inspector and they're like, yeah, you got to pull these ones off the shelf. I've reached out to them and be like, hey, our owner probably doesn't want me saying this, but I was like, come to our warehouse, check everything here, so you're not bothering all these retailers. Or even more so, let's at least get onto the manufacturer side and make sure they're doing everything right too. punishing the retailer in any of this space just seems so backwards to me. And I'm hoping that gets solved in the next year. And we just kind of keep also thinking back to, you know, it's been almost 100 years since Prohibition, and we just changed alcohol laws 2 years ago. So this is very, very new, very young. Again, we all just have to be a little more patient. These things take processes to get done. And I think, I don't know, it might just be my Minnesotan naiveness, but I just believe everybody wants this regulated. Everybody wants this type of product, and everybody wants to do it the right way. We just all wish it was done 2 days ago, because that's how fast the world works now. But in reality, things take time.
Yeah. Well, Chris and Sean, I'm curious. I don't know if you can share what percentage of your portfolio these kinds of products make up now, but I would assume that it's growing.
Yeah. And again, we're pretty established in Minnesota, but we are also in Minnesota. I don't know if you guys have been up here in January before, but it's not the best time to visit us. The beverages are very seasonal across the board, alcohol, sodas, you name it. Everything's pretty cyclical here. And I had to kind of talk to a couple of our THC suppliers that I know you have a really good dry January program. You're really excited about dry January. It's still Minnesota. It's still going to be below zero. We even had a mild winter this year. And I think we only had 1 week below zero, which is surprising. But it's usually slow here. But I believe two or three of our suppliers had the best month ever in the THC space. So there was definitely a bump up. It was definitely a lift. Our trends continue to go in the right direction, but we still haven't had like a full year with several brands to like see how the trends are going. So we add a couple of SKUs and stuff like that. We haven't gotten rid of anything yet because we're still just trying to, you know, if something's not working, let's pivot with it and try and find something else. We're still in that space. And I think we got opportunities to do that. So trends are all going in the right direction, and even some were bucking the natural beverage trends of Minnesota, which was pretty neat to see. And we're really excited to see what this summer has, because it's going to be the first full summer with spring leading into it. Everybody's had a year to get comfortable, because we started 2 years ago, but liquor stores got it written on their liquor license last June. Mm-hmm. So they've really only been doing it 6 months. And, you know, big retailers like Total Wine, they've only been doing it since November. So like I said, this whole thing it's slowly building, but we don't know where the ceiling is yet. And it's already been fruitful and paid dividends for sure. But yeah, we have no idea where the ceiling is, but we're not there yet.
Sean, anything in terms of your mix and these beverages? I know you guys are a little bit newer to it, maybe.
Yeah, we're literally, we had a horrible January and we had no THC. We were landing planes to get some great brands in here. And then we got our IHEA license, which is a blessing. So January was, the numbers were, probably it was 10 to 15% of our business in February. March, it will be significantly more than that. We are a small, tiny distributor that covers a lot of territory from a craft beer perspective. And what I think it's caused us to do, I mean, we think it fits the natural trend. We think it supports the problem with dispensaries you have to go to, or it's a destination location. It solves the drinking occasion. I think the microdose is very approachable. Like my mom would drink this. This is not, my perception is this not a stoner drink.
Yeah.
Other than guys who maybe smoke a lot go, oh, finally they caught up with me and they're going to drink it for that reason. But from an actual intoxicating perspective, I think it's the better for you trend, which is certainly Southern California. It's the understanding that the THC and the regulated space is difficult to get to. We're thrilled about it. We're putting a lot of energy into it. I just looked at our numbers and we're going to do a lot more. Let's put it that way. Yeah. I see a lot of analogies to my time with Red Bull because it's a shot out of a cannon opportunity. Back with Red Bull, I was too young and stupid to really figure it out. Now, my goodness, let's just go. Let's have fun. And it's really aligning to the right partners on the supply side. And then trying to hook in to guys like Chris and Ted, who've been around the industry a long time, who can share what they're doing, even though the regulatory issues are different in Minnesota than maybe California. You know, how can we learn how to best lead the market and then support other people into the market? You know, there's a couple of Northern California distributors who are working on their IHO licenses or have it. And if we can share with them some of our learnings, I want them to be supported. You know, but this is definitely the tip of our arrow. And then we're using it to drive also a change in perspective from our reps. Our reps traditionally, you know, we tend to deal with the smaller breweries out there, and our reps are struggling to get, you know, 5-6 case orders. Yeah. Now I instruct them to go in and ask for an entire cold door.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not going to say the word, but I drop an F-bomb here and go, who the F are you asking me for a cold door? Yeah. And then what I do is I show them the Fox News Minnesota THC piece of the news piece that I'm sure Chris had a lot to do with top 10 liquors. And I said, this is where it's going, you know, this is where we're going. So it's been a change for us, and we're going to stay really aggressive on it. And the reason it's exciting is it's not another hazy IPA. It's not another buttery Chardonnay, right? This is an intoxicating beverage where there is the one thing that most of these suppliers have no ability to really engage in a positive way. And Chris, I'd welcome your thoughts on this, Chris, but most of the suppliers have no idea how to build demand. They have no idea. There's an inherent demand behind these drinks, behind this category. And since there is, you have retailers making more money, a better margin. You have them taking less risk because of it. We're taking less risk because of it, not on a regulatory side, but certainly on a just a straight margin business perspective, right? Because we're giving consumers what they want. I think Chris is spot on.
Sean, I got to bolster your story there too. I don't know if even Sean's aware, but in a single PO in California, he dropped more beverages than the entire regulated channel sold. When I say regulated, that's the dispensary channel. But he dropped more beverages than the entire regulated channel sold in a whole month. Oh. He did that in one PO. I mean, the order of magnitude of difference between what we'll be able to do in the broad market versus a dispensary market that's really struggling right now, it's absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, it's not even apples to oranges. It's like apples to Ferraris.
And it's exciting to be excited. I'm having more fun right now in this business than I've had. And I've been in the beverage game for 24 years. I'm having more fun than I've ever had in this business. And I am, because I'm blessed to be around, you know, folks like you. Certainly Ted, I talk to every day. I'm blessed to have him as a supplier partner. These are good people getting after it. And I couldn't be thrilled. And I also couldn't be working harder. I'm putting in 90 hour weeks, and I'm happy to, because this is freaking cool. This is just awesome.
Nice. Nice. Well, I have one more, and I'm sure Bianca might have one and Jordan might have one. But my last one is, where does legal cannabis fit in this, insofar as, are they fighting you guys on this? Because I feel like in some markets they are.
That's such a good question. When established cannabis companies hear about what we're doing, their instant response is, I'm being threatened and I need to respond defensively. When they learn more about what we're doing, they realize that we're proposing a win-win. We want to have a two-market solution. We want to see low-dose hemp beverages, low-dose hemp products out in the broad market. And we want to be reducing the friction to get people into the regulated channel, into dispensaries. Mm-hmm. We can help them create a bigger consumer base. We can help them remove more stigma from THC. We can really work hand in hand to create a healthier industry for everybody. And really all we're doing is broadening the exposure of the plant. You know, this is everything that all of us talk about all the time, everything the regulated markets have been advocating for. Now that it's actually happening, once they realize how we're doing it, they tend to come around. But yeah, we do get battles. People like Trulieve in Florida,
yeah,
proposing an awful lot of legislation that would shut down the hemp market. So much of that comes from them already having 80% market share in a single market. When you get these monopolistic players, they're going to try to keep all the cards to themselves. We're breaking that up. You know, I don't want to say it's David versus Goliath. It's really Goliath versus Goliath. But when we think about what's better for the public, what's better for the future of the industry, the way that we're moving checks an awful lot of boxes. And almost every meeting we have, after about 15 minutes, people realize it's a win-win deal. Mm-hmm. And what a great way to approach business.
Yeah, and that goes back to, I mean, you've said it a few times, Ted, how the recreational market, dispensaries, they don't sell beverages. Like the consumer there is not there, the market's not there. Like, they just don't sell it. And kind of going back to what I was saying, where this is all we're really focused on, because we're kind of noticing that, like, the gummies and the candy bar stuff, they don't work in our retail spots. A liquor store is not where you pick up gummies. It's not where you pick up an edible. And my belief is that's because you take a gummy because you're going from 0 to 60. You take it and you're along for the ride, where the beverages, again, you drink them as you go, and you're able to microdose and control your level of intoxication that way. Exactly. So really, that's, again, just kind of going back to the language and everything that we've been using around here, because we are definitely seeing it. And really, medicinal is the one that's really been pushing the most against, because they're already taking the hit with everything going recreational, and now they think they're taking another hit with the hemp. It's possible that we might have more of the consumers that the medicinal area will have, but again, it's still a completely different angle and a different market, different retail. It's different across the board with the beverages, and they really shouldn't be threatened by any of it. If anything, we should all be kind of joining forces to kind of promote the three-tier system, because one thing that we are really good at a three-tier system is regulating monopolistic practices. We stop the Goliaths from controlling markets as the middleman who we give small brands attention, we give big brands attention. We don't have, you know, we're not beholden to just one entity at any given time. Like, we run our own businesses. I've been working on a lot of local groups here. I've been able to get involved with them, but hopefully on the national level, on the bigger scale, that's what we see, is them kind of joining with us, because everything else that Ted said about it, just making it so much more accessible in the lowest potency, the safest way possible across the country, it's really only going to be beneficial for everything, taxes, people's health, all of that kind of stuff. Like, everybody wants it. So,
well, we don't have big tax problems here at the state level in California.
No.
So, like, we're all flush over here in California. So I'm sure they won't tax.
Yeah.
I'm curious about where else these drinks are going to be on shelves in California. Obviously, Total Wine is what really has struck a nerve in our industry, in the beer industry. But, you know, what other retailers are going to start carrying this? Because, like Sean said, you guys have to do a lot of education around it. And so what's that process been like, and who's kind of coming on board?
I've made a short list of the people who are going to have this in the near term. I can just read it over real quick.
Yeah.
It's effing everyone.
Yeah.
Anywhere finer beverages are sold, anywhere someone's savvy, anywhere they want to see growth, anywhere they want to provide a fantastic alternative that offers better recreation and better relief, we're going to have these beverages on shelves. And by God, it's going to be all over the place. We want to promote that win-win. We want to get good tax revenue for the state. We wanted to do this in age-gated, responsible ways. And really, we're forcing regulators to come forward with better regulations for the space, too. And part of how we do that is we got to get all the toothpaste out of the tube. Let's not create another black market. Let's not create an area where consumers would be unsafe with untested product. Let's do this all the right way. And let's force regulators to actually effing do something.
Yeah. I mean, for us, we obviously see the rate of the on-premise and the off-premise working well. On-premise is a little bit behind, but we're getting significant reorders. We definitely have some tip of the arrow folks. We are doing some business in the smoke shops. Not a ton, because I don't think they're particularly good at selling beverages yet, but we've got some cooler placement in there that we're hoping to build gravitas around that opportunity. We're also seeing it in the independent C stores in some markets. We're seeing interest from gas stations. The tricky part about that again is how do you regulate it? I don't, you know, when we put a set in, and my guys are my sales reps, my sales team's not allowed to sell less than five cases to a location, because to us, that's the minimum amount of facings that builds enough gravitas to say this is a category and it's here to stay. That's relatively easy because we put it next to the RTDs, we put it next to Beatbox and Buzz Balls and in a liquor store. In gas stations, what we're doing is we have to go in and do some education, say this is a 21 plus. And we're doing that with some of the POS we're putting out, because people tend to want, well, we'll just, you know, we'll give you some space in the fluid replacement door or the energy door. And I certainly wouldn't want any of my kids or anybody not knowing going, oh, geez, I wanted to get a Red Bull. And, you know, I got a, you know, Cheech and Chong instead because I thought it was cool, their energy product. And lo and behold, it had 5 milligrams of THC in it. So we see it everywhere as well as where Ted's going. We're not in the coffee shops and movie theaters and hair salons yet, although we're going to be going there with some of the products we're getting in.
Yeah. I wanted to just kind of dive in a little bit on marketing. I know we're starting, Ted, like you said, and Sean, starting to see it pop up everywhere. But I ask this because, you know, Total Wine is getting knee deep into this segment, but they haven't been too keen to really talk about it publicly yet. Do you still sense there are reservations in marketing and promoting this product, or can people be as loud as they want to be in, you know, saying this is what we're doing?
I think that I don't think there's an underlying regulatory structure for that. So if you ask me right now, Jordan, Sean, what are the advertising rules? Can you wrap a van as an example?
Yeah.
With Squared or 3G. The answer is I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm busy enough that I'm not necessarily asking the question. I'm doing the POS, the store level. And educating people like Dan Silverstein at, you know, the LA Beer Fest to say, hey, this fits who you are and it's going to work. But I'm not sure that there's an understanding of what you can and can't do on a state by state basis. Ted, I might be speaking out of school. You might have.
Well, here and there, there's nowhere where it's really well worded. So AB 45 in California is a good example. It says that we can't reasonably target children. So what they're saying is that anywhere that a sign is posted, we need to be able to demonstrate that it's a reasonable person's expectation that 70% of the people seeing that sign would be over 21. Actually, it says in the law over 18. So we have to demonstrate that we're effectively targeting adults in a lot of markets. Then we've got the standard meta issues. So Facebook, Instagram won't allow you to mention THC. Same with LinkedIn. I mean, you can sell ketamine on LinkedIn, but you can't say THC. Those are things that are still somewhat problematic. In addition to just the advertising issues, you know, even shipping is still a thing. I'm on the phone with truckers probably once a week right now, explaining that these aren't illegal drugs. This is federally legal. This is why. We even have a letter from our lawyer with a do not detain notice for all of our pallets now, explaining how this is legal and how we are compliant with federal laws. But it's a lot of education and a lot of responsible behavior, especially when it comes to advertising. We want to make sure that we're not crossing lines with the FDA. We're not pissing off anybody, the Department of Ag or the Department of Health. And we have a lot of regulatory bodies who are trying to figure out who's going to oversee all of this.
Yeah. Is that something you all plan to tackle sometime soon? Or is that kind of later days? Or is that something you're tackling every day?
But lucky for us, all of our money's gone into expansion and scaling and growth. So there's nothing left over for advertising. So we should be so lucky as to have those issues soon.
Right.
There will be advertising put out there at some point. I imagine it's going to be similar regs to what we see for the regulated industry. But we'll see how it comes out. I mean, this is really, it's a big hot button for legislators. They want to make sure that we're not targeting children. And we want to make sure that's the case too. So of course we're willing to be overly compliant there. But keeping out of eyes of children is even harder than keeping out of reach. Yeah. So it's a little bit of tiptoeing through a minefield.
Right. And obviously, I've heard you all mention, you know, education is a key piece of this. Can you do sampling at stores, or is that kind of a, I don't know, topic as well?
From our perspective, we haven't been overly aggressive on that, but from our perspective, we can, at least in LA County, because they effectively regulate this like it's Coca-Cola. Right. So we can do sampling and we plan on doing more of it, but like kind of the rubber hits the road, or if you will, or the question starts to come up. Like, to me, a natural place to go and sample would be the college university or the university, the college kids, right? They're going to be early adopters. They tend to adopt a lot of stuff. They already know the marijuana culture much more than my wife and I do. But the question is you're going to run into an 18-year-old and you're going to run into a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old. Do you want to do that? And that's a discussion that we have to have with our brands to figure out what the right thing to do is, especially if we have the opportunity to drive foot traffic to the two or three liquor stores, i.e. around UCLA.
I mean, as one of the brands, I could say emphatically 21 plus only, well clear the line, mostly because we're the ones out there taking bullets at the really? Legislative level.
Yeah.
Chris has really come miles in developing some sampling programs. Mr. Freem?
Yeah. I've actually like talked with Total Wine leadership and stuff, and they had asked, you know, what's the story of sampling in Minnesota? And the real answer is, how well does your lawyer want to argue it? But I wasn't about to tell their leadership team that, especially because they're all lawyers, I'm pretty sure. So it kind of lives in a space between our legislation and the statutes that are going to be implemented next year. It lives kind of in the middle there. So the answer is, we didn't really know. But what we have now kind of worked out is doing non-medicated or non-dosed samples. And it's just a catch-all. You can sample it anywhere. If a kid gets a hold of it, it's totally fine, anything like that. So that's the direction we kind of told Total Wine to move in. And it was really based around kind of the only thing really written in our legislation that you can't do anywhere was sample or allow somebody to drink alcohol or imbibe THC within 5 hours of each other, which is impossible to police. It's a ridiculous rule. But same like at Total Wine, we're not going to be like, well, either next Friday, either sample THC or you sample alcohol. We're not about to have people do that. So we kind of found this end around of, how about at the end of a run, don't put THC into all of the products. I do see it's going to be an expensive route for the manufacturers. It's really easy for me to say, because we're right in the middle. It's not, we don't make it, we're not sampling it. It's for the retailer and the manufacturers to figure out. But it really has been a catch-all. So I believe,
Chris, I think they listened to you, man, because when I asked my folks, my California managers, you know, because I started getting questions about that, my California Total Line managers, that's exactly what their response was. We'll do sampling, you get on a sampling counter, but it just, you know, there can't be any THC in it.
Yeah. And so we've a huge majority of our current suppliers have kind of gone down that route. And that's all been part of the whole learning curve of this whole industry in the last 2 years. We've been, you know, making small moves and small pivots here and there to kind of just, you know, see what we do. Cause we always went by the idea that we can't control the market. You know, I turned 40 last year. I don't get to decide what's cool anymore. Like the kids get to do that. The market tells us what we can do. We can do everything right up until they put the product in their cart, but we can't put the cans in their cart. That's the only thing we can't do, but everything up to that we can. So we can influence it, we can control it and do what we can, but we don't get to decide what the final answer is. If any of us had that answer, we'd be all a lot richer than we are right now. I guarantee you that if we had the answer. So this, yeah, was just one of the small kind of pivots and moves that we made. And so far the investment has been working where you get liquid to lips. I mean, that's been something we've been doing in the, all the other beverage spaces for years. So why not here as well? And like I said, it's been working.
Well, I think this is about all the time we have, but one more question. You know, you mentioned statutes changing next year and pivots and this sort of thing. Are you scared? And what are you doing to help combat, you know, this, you know, like the AGs writing Congress, you know, in Florida and in Georgia, them trying to pass legislation to reel in this intoxicating hemp, right? Does this threaten the businesses you guys have built thus far? Or do you think none of that will really come to pass? Obviously, Hemp Beverage Alliance has some lobbying efforts, I would assume. What's going to happen there?
But I'll start with just kind of like locally in Minnesota, because we're established, we've got a full year under our belt. And me and a couple counterparts here at our office who met last time, Jill and Jesse, we've sat down with a couple legislative representatives and stuff, people who are working on the bill, and, you know, gave them our ideas and our thoughts. And as they do, they said that they were listening and they will take it into consideration. But that's the answer we were expecting. So we're just trying to, yeah, like I said, just get our ideas out there, are self-regulating responsibly, a couple of the small tweaks. So like that 5-hour rule, like it, I've heard several times, they're just trying to get rid of that and put all insurance under the dram shop, just like put it in with alcohol and just don't serve anybody who's looks over serve. Don't, you know, follow all the rules you do with an intoxicating beverage. Cause at the end of the day, that's what this is. And it's really no different. If anything, people will say it's safer because you don't drive 100 down the freeway after you're high, you drive 20. So, like we think there's some good positive sides to it. So we keep just promoting that and promoting again, that the beverages have nothing to do with the recreational market. And even the expanded hemp market, and really nothing to do with the industrial hemp side of it. Like what the AGs are arguing for the change in the farm bill, they're arguing that we misinterpreted what they wrote. And maybe we did, but this is a really happy happenstance now. Like we're in a really good spot. Let's keep it rolling. It's just think it's really good for everybody. But yeah, I know the HBA, the Hemp Beverage Alliance, has definitely got some things in the works. So I'm going to hear what Ted also has to say on that because we're following it pretty closely, but locally, not too worried. The farm bill one, a little bit of worry, but be dumb not to pay attention to it at this point.
Jen, I love that you brought up the legislation and pivots and just the way that these things can change. We got tired of playing legislative whack-a-mole, worrying about different bills coming up and where things are going. What the HBA is pivoting to is a proactive stance. What we want to see is really well thought out, well-worded legislation being proposed, and then going about it the old-fashioned way, getting handshakes, educating legislators, getting the yes votes that we need, and passing legislation that creates a framework and a foundation for us to build a whole industry upon. I think that the more we can do that, the more we can be proactive, the more support we get from retailers and from distributors, the faster we can get all this done. But it's a monumental lift. The first steps have been taken. Like really, this is cutting down the trees on the prairie. Now we need to start building houses and building roads, and that's what we're doing right now. And we're doing it proactively. We're doing it intelligently with really good legislation, making sure that people are safe, that products are well-tested, the industry is well-regulated, and that provides income to states. And these are all super important things that we're able to do.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for such a fascinating chat. And, you know, your knowledge is vast and it's first to market, really. You guys are on the forefront of this whole developing industry and it's fascinating to watch as it happens. So thank you so much. And we'll have you on again soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Really appreciate your support and your talking about the category for us.
Blessing. 100% blessing. Great to meet you guys. Chris, great to meet you. If there's anything I can ever do to support you guys through this process or anything else from my little corner of the world here in SoCal, please reach out. I'd be happy to help.
Yeah, same. I'm happy to talk to the distributors and suppliers. And, you know, we all, it's early on. It reminds me a lot of the early craft beer days where we were all friends. Well, 15 years later, not everybody's friends, but we're still friends, and we still want to see the category grow and move in the right direction. So yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn as well as Mr. Freem. And yeah, reach out. I'm on all social medias and stuff like that. It's not too hard to find me. I'm not hiding. So
awesome.
Yeah, I'm barbeverages.com. You can find not a picture because this space is made for radio, but, but it's got my phone number on there and email. I'd be happy to help anybody. Thank you guys for the opportunity. It's really cool.
Awesome. Thank you guys. Thanks, cheers.
Cheers.
Bye. Thanks, Jen. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.